Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station you're listening to. They're my views. They're the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, at least until about the half hour, and then if you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. But right now we have with us Kevin DeMeritt from Lear Financial, and we're going to be talking about what's happening in the world of finance, what's happening to our monetary system, and how the rising prices of oil, which of course are already beginning to impact upon the airlines and certainly upon the trucking lines, and of course you at the gas pump as well, how this is going to really play out. It's with a very, very weak economy that is really struggling, and with only, I think, what, 32,000 manufacturing jobs, or non-agricultural jobs, I should say, that were created in the month of July, how this is already going to be playing out. Kevin, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Well, thanks for having me, Stan.
Well, tell us what's happened since the last time we talked.
Well, oil's up. Gold's up. Unemployment doesn't look as great as, or well, it looks worse than they had estimated. And I think that the views of the economy, at least from the consumer sentiment numbers and what we're seeing out in the markets, has leveled off a little bit from the euphoria that we saw, you know, a few weeks ago or a few months ago even, because of these higher oil prices and because of the hurricane down in Florida. A lot of economists are cutting economic growth numbers substantially going forward for the rest of this year, and even cutting estimates for 2005. So I think you're going to see a little bit of a slowdown. And when you combine that with higher interest rates, probably maybe another one before the election, but definitely after the election, just how that's going to play out is going to be very interesting.
Well, I know it's last time we talked, you had mentioned that you had picked up an article in the Wall Street Journal about Warren Buffett actually having increased the amount of money that Berkshire Hathaway is actually putting into foreign currency futures contracts. And so I will tell you that I had the hardest time tracking down that article, but it was there just like you said. It was on page C3, which nobody ever reads. But the significance of that, of course, is Warren Buffett is certainly one of the smartest investors we have in the entire country. Back in 1956, he started out with $100 he put into a family investment fund, and a few years later, about 8 years later, they had enough money to buy Berkshire Hathaway Corporation. Today, Warren Buffett's share of Berkshire Hathaway is worth about $40 billion or more. So, but he's been talking about the danger of inflation, the danger of the dollar falling for a long time. And he started talking in 1997, why he bought 130 million ounces of silver. But what was so fascinating about what Kevin had pointed out was the fact that Berkshire Hathaway has invested $19 billion in foreign future contracts, foreign future currency contracts. That's a lot of money to bet against the dollar, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Any way you add it, $15 billion is a lot of money, and it's a clear signal that he believes the dollar is headed much, much lower than where we are today.
And I believe that Warren Buffett really knows what's going to happen out there. And certainly, if the dollar falls, it means that everything that is denominated in dollars, whether it's the annuities or pensions or savings accounts or CDs, they're all going to simply lose value dramatically. He'll make a lot of money. Well, isn't that the way the game is played? The rich get richer, and we'll be right back here in just a moment with Kevin DeMeritt. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Kevin DeMeritt. We're talking about really what's going on financially. Well, Kevin, how is this increase of oil price going to impact upon the overall economy here in the United States and really upon the economy of the rest of the world?
Well, you know, if we take one instance of where this oil price is really starting to affect people, if we just take the airline industry, which was beaten up from 9/11 and continuing to get beaten up by this, these higher and higher oil prices, we're looking at a company that was very strong 8-9 years ago, United Airlines, that just recently announced that they are going to start cutting some of their pension benefits. So you're going to see some of that take place. We're seeing a lot of these airlines starting to lay off people, and articles saying things like, well, will the airline industry survive? I think there's going to be a lot of consolidation for people that are losing money and more money because of higher oil prices, right down to, you know, the smaller type of airlines. There's going to be a lot of consolidation in the market. Now, you take that all the way through to the person who's a trucker that needs to truck food products or goods from one coast to the other coast, or from the port to wherever it needs to go, Costco, a grocery store, what have you, and you are going to see higher and higher grocery prices and clothing prices and so on and so forth. Now, the government, as you and I both know, toy around and fudge with those numbers a lot, so it doesn't look like inflation is as high as it is. But this oil situation is going to cause more and more inflation going forward. And you talk to the bigger oil executives out there, they don't believe that this oil price is going to come down under $40. Matter of fact, they're looking at it in the $45 to possibly $55 range in the next 6 to 9 months.
Well, that's going to have a devastating impact upon the airlines. And, of course, the airlines start defaulting. And it's not simply just United, but Northwest is having trouble. Delta is having trouble. If they start defaulting on their pension funds, why, this could start a cascading event, because the certainly the Federal Pension Guarantee Benefit Corporation is already $12 billion in the hole. They're supposed to guarantee all these pension funds. I think they're paying off about 3,500 right now that have gone down the tubes. My concern is we could see a cascading big collapse of the entire corporate pension system. Have you thought about that?
Well, we have. Matter of fact, there's numerous articles over the past couple of years, especially as the NASDAQ had fallen off in 2000, talking about how little the pension plans had in them, how much they would have to make up to satisfy their obligations within their pensions. There are numerous instances that you see pensions from extremely large and well-known companies, which I'll not mention on the air.
Hold that thought right there, because we've just got to pull our program's other stations back with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Kevin DeMeritt. We're just talking about what's happening to the pension funds and the fact that if the airlines were to actually go down or to go into bankruptcy, as United is, and it just says, we can't pay our pension funds, we've got the Federal Pension Guarantee Benefit Corporation, or Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, backed by our government, that says, we're going to pay all the money. If these pension funds go down, why, we'll take care of it. The trouble is, they're already $12 billion in the hole, and they're already paying off on about 3,500 pension funds from corporations that have gone defunct. And now, of course, we're talking about suddenly some of our major airlines already not being able. This could start a cascading cascading effect in the corporate pension funds, couldn't it?
Well, absolutely. If United gets away with this, then what's to say that a lot of the other large companies that have these same problems, not only in the airline industry, but a lot of other industries, don't follow suit if United can get away with this and put all the pressure back on the Pension Fund Guarantee, you know, corporation? And then who really pays for that? It's you and I and our tax dollars that need to go back into that fund so that they can pay the pensions of people that the government is guaranteeing through that corporation. So do we really get out of this situation? No, we don't. We can't point a finger and say, okay, they're going to take care of it. They don't have any money to take care of it. It's going to be our tax dollars, much like it was in 87 when the real estate situation had happened with the savings and loans. You know, it was taxpayers' dollars that had to pay for those mistakes, and that's exactly what's going to happen again. Taxpayers' dollars are going to have to pay for United's pension situation, and if things get worse and worse, because of higher oil prices, because of higher interest rates, so on and so forth, the pension industry, I believe has a lot of cracks in the walls, and people need to really pay attention to their savings and retirement accounts at this particular point, especially in that area.
Well, of course, the trouble is that we can say the federal government's going to guarantee it, but the federal government doesn't have any money. In fact, they're borrowing this year. It's going to be at least $500 billion, probably even more than that if you take all the money they're going to steal from Social Security and from Medicare. So that's a couple of $100 million they just take every year, and they give them an IOU that's going to be paid for by the government. But the government doesn't have any money other than what it takes from us by taxes, what it borrows from foreigners, or certainly what it creates out of nothing by just printing more money. But that's highly inflationary. So where is this money going to come from? The government doesn't have any money, and they've raised taxes on us too high. Why, of course, that's just going to kill the economy, because people aren't going to work if they're paying a 40, 50, 60% income tax.
Well, that's right. And, the government lowered taxes to help this economy get a burst of energy to try to move us out of this recession, and in reality what they've done is put us more in debt. Now, it may have helped us in the short term, but the long term, those tax benefits have been basically spent in the economy. The economy has moved forward, and now what next? What next in 2005? What's going to push us up? It's not going to be lower interest rates, and it's not going to be tax breaks. And if we start getting into a situation where pensions start to go, because companies just can't keep up, like these airline companies to start and other companies down the supply chain, then they're going to have to raise taxes to try to stop this deficit, stop the bleeding from the pension plans, and so on and so forth. So I think these tax situations are fairly short-lived, and we'll probably see higher taxes. In my opinion, whoever's president within the next 4 to 5 years, we're four and a half years, we're going to see higher taxes no matter who's in office.
Well, I fear that you're right, but certainly any time that countries get into a sort of a situation where we are today, with a failing economy and with, of course, inflation, and people are really beginning to get concerned about what's going on. So often in years past, why we seem to have turned to wars as a very good means of getting the economy going. That certainly gets the economy going. The trouble is we don't have a manufacturing base. We'd have to import most of our war materials from communist China today, that really has a manufacturing base. But we seem to be intent upon sending our manufacturing base for so many of the major items overseas.
Well, that's right. I mean, at the beginning of this conversation, you brought up a couple of great points. What's the oil price doing? What is Warren Buffett, one of the most successful investors, doing with his money? And we're talking about where America is debt-wise, and what a very successful investor that's very wise and keen to what's going on, what is he doing with his money? He's taking his money and he's saying the United States is selling the farm off piece by piece. That's basically what he has said. Not actually verbatim, but he did use the farm situation. We're selling off the farm. Well, not only that, but I had an article here that I thought would be very interesting. It says, all that glitters is quite literally gold. For precious metals wholesalers, in the 3 months to July, according to new figures yesterday, which was yesterday, showed consumer demand for the shiny stuff soared by 11%. Now, this is the interesting part, Stan. It says China, Saudi Arabia, and India led the global race to ditch the U.S. dollar in favor of buying gold. Now, I'm not sitting here saying this because I'm in the gold industry. I'm sitting here saying this so that people understand it's not just Warren Buffett. Here's three very large countries ditching the dollar in this article to buy gold, and that's exactly what they're doing. They've sold off dollars to buy gold as a hedge against the fall in an economy that they think is choke full of debt. You have higher interest rates coming. You have an extremely high real estate market. Stocks still aren't really that undervalued or even at fair market value. You have a trade deficit that continues to climb, a budget deficit that continues to climb. Nobody really likes us on a global basis, and consumer debt is at record highs, even though it should be down because of lower interest rates. When you add all that together, it's very bad for the dollar. It's great for some other types of investments, gold included, but other types also. But that's what Warren Buffett is looking at, and that's what these other countries are looking at. And I think that's what individual investors have to at least educate themselves on. How do we protect ourselves from some of the things that are going on and actually benefit from them?
In fact, I was fascinated to read in the Bob Chapin letter that even Russia is accumulating gold now to back their dollar. Their central bank is buying gold to back their currency. and America. Of course, we don't even know if we have any goal behind it, but we know for that our government certainly is not doing anything to protect our dollar. It's just printing more and more and more paper money, and there's no instance in history where a nation has gone into a fiat money system, at which we have the whole world on, and that system has survived. But it appears that other countries are beginning to protect themselves from the potential collapse and the loss of the value of the dollar, which is the reserve currency of the world. They're protecting themselves, and we could be just sort of hanging out there to dry one day with a lot of paper dollars, and nobody wants them.
That's right. I mean, when you continue in this article, it's talking about tonnage terms, which are usually governments that buy the tonnage, you know, the full tonnage of gold. And obviously, individual investors aren't going to go out and literally buy a ton of gold. And they say here that gold demand is up 11% in tonnage terms after a 12% rise in the first quarter of 2004. So this was numbers up to June. As of yesterday, we had a 12% rise in the, at the beginning of the year. So these are governments that are purchasing and backing themselves or their central banks by gold, and another 11% through the second quarter of this year. Now, China has done an interesting situation, a turnaround also. For the first time in 47 years, they're allowing their individual citizens or consumers to purchase gold. Now, they could purchase it with a necklace or a bracelet or something like that, or a ring, what have you, but it gets very expensive because of the fabrication costs. Now, those citizens, for the first time in 47 years, are able to actually purchase physical gold itself. Now, why would the government, after 47 years, for no good reason, say, now everybody can purchase gold? They want to back their country by something, and they're allowing citizens to go out and purchase gold at the cheapest way possible, in bar form or gram form, coin form, what have you, and giving themselves some backing by their individual citizens doing the same thing. That's a big turnaround that we haven't seen China allow their citizens to do for 47 years, and it makes more sense now that they want those citizens to hold something that's going to be valuable when the dollar falls. And, you know, you read between the lines, and I think that's basically what they're saying at this particular point, following Warren Buffett's lead.
And so what about India? Is India, I know certainly the Indian people have been accumulating silver. Are they accumulating gold as well? Because the Indian economy is really booming. Of course, so many of those people now are doing the jobs that used to be done here in the United States for Hewlett-Packard and for Dell Computer. And they just have whole buildings full of people answering the telephone and, of course, taking complaints or giving advice on electronic things produced here in America or maybe even produced overseas for the American market, but, of course, being sold here in the United States. And then, of course, the support is over in India. So India is really doing pretty well economically, my understanding is.
Yeah, absolutely. It says here, record oil prices boosted demand across the Middle East, so you can understand why the Middle East is purchasing gold. They have been threatening to sell to some parts of the Middle East have been threatening to move from the U.S. dollar to the euro dollar as payment for oil, and then they came out with the gold dinar, which is an actual gold coin that is currency. So we can understand that that part of the world would have an increase in gold demand in dollars. They've increased by 25%. 11% has been increased in the Indian economy, and India actually, Stan, leads the world in gold demand, and they're, even though the price of gold is much higher, they've increased demand by over 11%. I don't know. I didn't have the numbers because I didn't have the numbers here from the World Gold Council on U.S. demand for gold. But our demand is increasing, but not by 11 and 12 and 13%, you know, quarter after quarter. And I think these other countries are doing, and again, following the lead of Warren Buffett and some of these other countries out there, saying we don't want to hold U.S. currency. There's too many things going wrong over there, on a long-term basis anyway, that, you know, need to be changed before we invest in that currency anymore.
Well, I think it's very interesting. Warren Buffett is investing in foreign currencies. He won't tell us which ones, but it's European, whether it's euros or Swiss francs or what it is. But he has lost confidence in the American dollar. I believe Warren Buffett knows exactly what's going on. I think he's in touch with the people who really work behind the scenes. And he simply writes to the people at Berkshire Hathaway, the people who own his stock, and tells them what he thinks is going to happen. I think we ought to listen to Warren Buffett. I think he's a lot smarter than I am, that's for sure. And we certainly should give serious consideration to what Warren Buffett is talking about. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Kevin DeMeritt. And, Kevin, of course, we see the things that are happening here. We see, of course, the government insists that inflation really is only maybe 2-3%. Are those figures really accurate? Are they cooking the books?
Well, yeah. I mean, you could ask the man on the street or the woman on the street if she believes or he believes that inflation is up 2% or 3% from last year, and I think you're going to get an overwhelming no. When I go to fill up my gas tank, I don't think that gas has increased by 2 or 3%. I go to the movies. I don't think the movies increased by 2 or 3%. Try to buy food, and the food prices have been going up. Milk prices came back down a little bit, but they've been sky high. Lumber prices, I just talked to a contractor. They had a bid on 154 homes down in Palm Springs, and by the time they actually purchased the lumber, which was maybe 4 or 5 months later, 6 months later at the longest, they paid an extra $300,000 for the lumber to build those homes that they now have to pass on to the consumer once they get the homes built. So inflation is much higher than 3 or 4%. I think it's more in the 5.5 to maybe 7%. Could be as high as maybe 8.5-9%. I know that you have someone that has done some very extensive research and has come back with higher numbers. But I think if we put it at 5.5 or 6%, it's a scary situation, especially when you have your money in the bank at 1.5 or 2%.
Well, I remember back in 1971. I'm old enough to remember when August 15th, in 1971, when Richard Nixon closed the gold window and said, "You know, we're not going to let people redeem the foreigners redeem their American dollars with gold any longer." And because there is this terrible inflation that we have, it's almost 5%. Why, we're going to impose weights and price controls. Of course, we're only going to temporarily close the gold window. In fact, I was reading his remarks the other day. It was only temporary. Well, of course, that was 1971, and that temporary closing of the gold window, it became a permanent closing of the gold window. And now no country can redeem American dollars with gold. In fact, we have a totally fiat money system. So not only that, but we force that fiat money system on the rest of the world. The only trouble is so much of the rest of the world is renouncing that. A euro is now 15% backed by gold. The Swiss franc, 50% backed by gold. The gold dinar, 100% backed by gold. And which currency do you think most people throughout the world really want? Are you concerned about this move really towards gold-backed currencies while America keeps saying why it's just as solid as the American dollar? But do people really believe in the solid American dollar anymore?
Well, I'm not concerned about it because I think if I asked you the same question, you might give me the same answer. I understand it, and I've protected myself either by owning other currencies or buying and owning the metal to give myself the security that I need for myself and my family. So I'm not concerned about it. What I am concerned about are the people out there that continue to follow the mainstream media that continue to say the stock market's okay, the real estate market's not in any sort of a bubble. The dollar is going to be okay. Alan Greenspan saying the economy is going to turn around. Yes, but at what cost to the future? These low interest rates and bringing down the tax base, I think it's fantastic. But what is the cost that America has paid because of that? And there's one word, debt, and a lot of it.
I'll hold that thought for just a minute as our stations return right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Kevin DeMeritt from Lair Financial. And why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about Lair and how they could get in touch with you and what they'll learn if they do get in touch with you?
Well, Lair Financial is a precious metals company, so when people hear me talk about the precious metals, it's because that's what we specialize in. That's what I know the most about. We've written books about the economy. We do research on the economy that we actually sell to other people also, but we are an investment company in precious metals, and we try to help educate people not only on the precious metals but the economy also through newsletters and tapes and books and so on and so forth. What we have available for people on your program, and this is an exclusive situation, we have a free gold investors guide, which we normally give away free. It goes through our top recommendations, where we see the economy, how to purchase gold at the best possible prices, and also how to use gold in your retirement accounts if you have a 401k, 403b, or just a plain IRA. So if people would like to have that information, they can give us a phone call at 888-302-7111. That's 888-302-7111. I want to mention there's no obligation. You get the information. If you like it, great. We might be able to do some business, but it's very educational. On top of that, we have our audio tape called Interest Rates and the Gold Boom Ahead. It's an audio tape. It's normally $29. That is included in the information that will go out. The title is a little misleading because it says Interest Rates and the Gold Boom Ahead, but it gives an overview of stocks, bonds, real estate, the gold market, not only our opinions, but the opinion of a lot of other experts out there that can help people get a little bit better understanding on what's going on and maybe some directions with their investing. So if they give us a call, 1-888-302-7111, just mention that they heard this information on your program, Stan, then all of this information will go out immediately, and again, there's no obligation.
All right, fine. Well, you know, it was really interesting. After our last conversation, just about a couple of weeks ago, I was writing my next newsletter, and I got on my computer, and I typed in under Google search, Alan Greenspan, 1966. Because I'd heard that Alan Greenspan had written an article back in 1966 when he was a libertarian, when he was working with the Ayn Rand group. And it was really fascinating to see what Alan Greenspan said in 1966. And basically he said that the entire system of a fiat money system was aimed at one thing. It was financing the welfare state and preventing people from being able to protect the value of what they have. And he said this is the reason for the attack on gold. And he was talking about 1966 is because the welfare state people don't want the average individual to have any means of protecting themselves. And then he goes on to this long dissertation, and much of this will be in my next newsletter, about, you know, what will happen when we have a totally fiat-backed currency and how the people are eventually going to end up losing everything. Now, he knows what's going to happen. He's studied this, really one of the finest dissertations on this attack on gold, on a gold-backed currency as I've ever written. Alan Greenspan, 1966. You'll be fascinated, or if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, that's the August newsletter. Just give us a call and we'll be glad to send you one, or it'll be posted up on the internet probably in a couple of weeks. But we'll tell you a little later in the evening how to get a copy of that. But I think you'll be interested in the material you're going to get from Kevin this evening. Is this a seminar that you actually put on, Kevin, this tape you're giving away?
Yeah, the seminar was actually a very long seminar. This tape is about 40 minutes long. The seminar was over 3.5 hours. So we took the best of and combined it into the tape, talking about, like I say, the different types of investments and how interest rates play into some of the cycles of real estate stocks and commodities and where we are in those cycles, and then give a forward-looking view from some of the experts. Some of the people maybe don't agree exactly with what our view is, but you get a very well-rounded view of exactly where the economy is going. And I think in the end, everybody agrees that we have problems. There's a lot of debt. The gold market looked very positive on everybody's radar screen, although we had ranges anywhere from $550 all the way up to $1,200. So there were some ranges in there, but if you even use $500 from today's level, we just broke over $400 again a couple of days ago, it's a decent return for folks. I think it's very valuable information when you're forward-looking with your investments.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Kevin DeMeritt. And when we return, why, we invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So give us a call if you have a question or comment. I think this subject is important. And, of course, Kevin DeMeritt does help us here at Radio Liberty, but we think his information is valid, and they have an excellent reputation. So we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and right now we have Tony calling in from SoCal. Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Oh, fine, Dr. Stan.
I haven't heard from you in a long time.
Well, I always listen.
Okay, fine. Well, it's good to hear from you.
Oh, thank you. Earlier in your conversation, I think you hit upon something. I don't know whether you realize it or not, but...
I probably don't. Tell me what it was we said.
Well, you know, you've been discussing 911 for quite some time. And all of the suspicious things that nobody really wants to answer, and our, you know, government, and what they officially say and what they don't say, and the whole thing. I don't have to tell you. But I happen to feel that one of the real reasons that we're in the current war mode is because of the currencies. I don't really believe that we invaded Iraq because we wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein, and I don't really believe, you know, what the media wants to tell us. I think that Saddam had a big bullseye put on him when he repudiated the acceptance of dollars for oil.
In other words, he wanted the euros, what you're saying.
That's exactly what he did.
Right.
And what's going on, what's happened since then, is now Iran has done the same thing, as well as Venezuela. And I really think that more than anything else, that what the what our wonderful cohorts in the world government right now are trying to do is keep the dollar from collapsing.
All right, let's go to and get Kevin's comments on that. Kevin, did you hear what Tony was saying? He thinks that the reason, one of the major reasons we went over to Iraq was because Saddam had apparently said he was going to take euros instead of dollars for gold, and of course I hadn't heard that both Iran and Venezuela were talking about the same thing. In other words, no longer selling gold for dollars, but selling them for euros. Have you heard that at all?
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. Saddam did indicate that prior to our attack, and I don't know how much significance that had, and I don't even want to try to figure out a percentage on it. I think there's a million different reasons we could say they went over there. What I think I can say is that, personally, in my own opinion, I don't think it was weapons of mass destruction, and that sounds like as good a reason as any that I've heard to go over and start a war. There could be a variety of other reasons also, and all added up, it's all legitimate and possibly relevant. But I think it's a great point to think about, if nothing else. I think
hold that thought right there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest this evening, Kevin DeMeritt. Tony had called in from SoCal and commented that he felt that the one reason we went to war in Iraq was because Saddam Hussein had said he wasn't going to sell his gold for, pardon me, his oil for American dollars. He wanted to be paid in euros. And, of course, this would challenge the supremacy of the American dollar. In fact, would challenge the entire world monetary system. And Tony was feeling that this might very well be the major reason we went into Iraq, since it's very obvious that we did not go in for weapons of mass destruction, or because we were afraid that Saddam Hussein was going to launch a missile at New York. So Kevin had certainly agreed that this might very well be the point. And then, of course, Tony had raised the point that Iran and Venezuela are both talking about abandoning the dollar and insisting on being paid for their oil in euros, which will really, of course, put a terrible crimp in the supremacy of the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Do you want to address that at all, Kevin? Anything about along that line? Because certainly Hugo Chavez is extremely angry with the United States because we did everything we could to back this this recent election down there, which, as far as I can tell, was an honest election. Everybody says he's a communist, but when was the last time anybody heard about a communist holding a free and open election? They say, well, it wasn't free. They manipulated the tally. Well, maybe Jimmy Carter doesn't know what he's talking about, but at least there were outside observers that were coming in. They said it was a free and open election. So Chavez has defied the leaders of the United States, and now, of course, there may very well be a price to pay for our backing the wrong horse there. What are your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Well, what I like about Tony is, and his thought process here is that I think if you put 12 scholars in a room at a RAND corporation and try to figure out, you know, reasons why the United States may have attacked other than weapons of mass destruction, and that was brought up, everybody would be scratching their heads and rubbing their chin saying, you know, that's not a bad answer. We need to visit that. So I think it's out of the box, and it's very relevant. So you put some time and effort into thinking about it a little bit longer, and you know, you could respond a little bit better. But I think it's extremely a valid thought that not a lot of people have probably come up with. So I like the idea of at least thinking in different ways of what had happened and why. So in that vein, I think that's fantastic. And if you're going to also take that a little bit further, we better stop talking about Warren Buffett buying all this foreign currency. You know, what are they going to do? Start the next war with Warren Buffett? But you have Warren Buffett and all these other countries doing the same thing, and I think the government is going to get extremely nervous about talk of a gold dinar, talk about using the euro dollar, because all of our power and everything that we have is all backed by the full faith and credit of our government or of our land with our dollar. And if you lose that, we lose a tremendous advantage that we have in the global economic community. That's scary. Tony is absolutely right. I would go to war over that if I thought that we were going to lose that advantage, because that's critical to our economy.
Well, if you go to Google and you put Saddam Hussein in, U.S. dollar, oil, and euro, you'll find out a whole lot of stuff.
All right.
Now, one thing about Hugo Chavez,
right?
If you do what I just mentioned and do a little research there, you'll find something that I don't read about in the papers at all. And he is so upset with the United States. He doesn't want our dollars. And he is very upset about low commodity prices in South America. Now, many people know that commodity prices are extremely low, and if you factor in inflation, in real terms, they're probably at a lot of commodities are at several hundred-year lows, which is one of the reasons why the third world is third world, is because they cannot produce commodities and get fair market value. So what he has done is he has set up an international barter system with 12 other nations, and rather than take any fiat money, he has set up a computerized barter system. And this has really upset the internationalists.
All right, well, I'm sure they're not very happy with him. It's very obvious that they were behind this whole effort to get him recalled. Have you heard anything at all about that, Kevin, about some sort of an international commodity system for commodities? Because certainly these prices of commodities are manipulated, which has guaranteed the impoverishment of the people throughout third world nations.
Yeah, there was a couple of systems that were tried. I haven't heard of this system, and I would love to look into it. You know, just trying to keep up with the day-to-day operations is hard enough, but this is all extremely interesting and you know, should be looked into, and I'm going to do what Tony suggested and just try to get a little bit of an overview on particularly that, just because it's a very interesting concept, and then try to figure out if there's any ramifications that come because of the threats of a euro dollar and this barter system. So, you know, like I say, Tony could be onto something, and it's these little things that in 5 years makes front page news, and Tony can say, hey, look, I told you guys so.
Hey,
well,
thanks.
Well, there's this one web page. I forget the whole thing, but I know if you put in Ratville Times, there's about at least 60 pages of documentation on this stuff.
Okay, well, thanks so very much,
well,
Tony.
Can I mention one other thing?
Sure you can.
Is that all right? Actually, I got two things, if it's all right. I mean,
well, I got one thing, because we got other colleagues.
Oh, okay. I don't want... Okay, well, one of the things that I'm mainly concerned about with oil right now is that the high prices of oil are going to hit one country in particularly very, very, very hard, and that is Japan. And Japan holds a tremendous amount of our paper fiat money and treasury bills. And there's a story on goldismoney.com, that's Jason Hommel, and he's got the documentation there that the Japanese right now are holding $987 billion of our dollars in one form or another, and they are ready to jump into the gold market with both feet. And they're looking at buying, I believe you said, 600 tons. And the documentation is there on that website, goldismoney.com.
All right.
Now, with the oil prices being, Japanese being extremely, extremely sensitive to oil shocks, how do you see this playing out?
All right, let's.
And I'll listen on the air.
Thanks
Thank you.
Much. And of course, the point is that Japan, which has the second largest economy in the world and a population half that of ours, they really are really an economic giant. And yet, of course, they've really become an economic giant by impoverishing their people. In other words, you can buy a Japanese television set far cheaper in the United States than a Japanese can buy it over in Japan. So the only reason they've gotten away with it is that people seem to be very subservient to government, but they certainly are going to be very badly hit by rising oil prices, aren't they?
Well, they really are, and Tony has a great point. What's been happening over the past 3 or 4 years as the dollar has continued to fall is that the Japanese have sold yen and purchased dollars to try to keep the exchange rate where they needed it or where they believe that a reasonable range for them would be, so their exports jumped up and they jumpstart their economy in that fashion. So they are holding an enormous amount of dollars. And he's absolutely right. We've written a couple of articles. Matter of fact, there's one in our newsletter talking about just exactly that. And you're correct also. Japan, and a lot of people understand this, is the world's second largest economy still to this day. Even over, the European economies over there. So they have a lot of clout. They're holding a lot of our dollars. Oil is going up, and how do you get yourself out of this? Well, at some point, if the dollar continues to fall, they don't want to hold dollars just because it's falling against their own currency. They're losing money in that way and not making it up on the trade surplus on the export side. So if those get out of balance, they absolutely will sell dollars and buy something, be it gold or some sort of commodity or a different currency. But that hurts the dollar and ultimately helps gold anyway. So I think gold is one of their options. Matter of fact, a couple of years ago, they threatened we will sell the U.S. dollar and purchase just that, gold. China's already doing some of it. I think if you start to see Japan and some other countries do it, then gold's going to go much higher and the dollar's going to go much lower. And Warren Buffett will be right once again.
Well, the thing that really bothers me is the economy of the United States is being propped up primarily by our good friends in communist China and our former enemies in Japan. What happens if those two countries say, we're not going to continue playing this game any longer, we're not going to continue sending you goods for dollars that are redeemable and absolutely nothing when the rest of the world is shifting to another currency? I think that people out there really have to begin thinking about what's going on. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. We have Bill calling in from Florida, and if you'd like to give us a call, our guest is Kevin Demerit of Lear Financial, and he spends a lot of time studying this, a lot more than I possibly can. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad, Dr. Stan. Found out I'm close to adrenal failure, but that's beside the point. Question I had for your guest from Lear Financial is, what does he suggest for someone who has their credit cards paid off and things such as that, except for their house, still owes a little bit on their house, has some money in bank stocks, major bank stocks, and some cash to invest? What should you invest it in? Euros? Should you put it into gold and silver? What's the best thing, or how much should you keep back in greenbacks?
All right, that's a pretty good fair question. What would you have to say to Bill, Kevin?
Well, first thing I would say to Bill is you deserve a medal. Most people don't have their credit cards paid off and their house almost paid off, so congratulations would be the first thing that I would say to you.
Thank you.
That goes a long way.
Wife's a banker, so she sees what goes on out there.
You bet, and just congratulations. You don't talk to many people that are in that situation in this kind of economy. Most people have been adding debt. With a little bit of money right now, I would say that there's a few things that you can do. We do not advocate having any more than 20% of anyone's portfolio in the precious metals market. I think it's a wonderful opportunity right now as interest rates go higher. Gold is a major beneficiary. We have higher oil prices and obviously higher inflation So I think gold is going to be a major beneficiary. Again, on this audio tape that we were talking about, I think it would be a great thing for you to listen to, simply for the fact you get a lot of different opinions on the stock market, the bond market, and areas and what to do there. But I would say 20% in the area that I work in is a reasonable percent in today's economy for someone that does not need income. If you need income, the percentages would have to go down from there. But if you've got things paid off and you want a good investment, 20%. If I were looking in the bond market or even CDs and you wanted to keep a little money in the bank, your wife's a banker, so you probably have a good secure situation there. I would invest in 6 month, a 1 year, and maybe a 1.5 year CD, simply for the fact we know Alan Greenspan's going to raise interest rates, and we want to stair step up as those interest rates start to rise. So every 6 months you have an opportunity to roll a CD over and go to that new higher rate and walk up the ladder along with what Alan Greenspan is doing, and interest rates are going to go higher, probably much higher next year, maybe another 1.5 points, to possibly as high as 2 points if the dollar really falls off and they need to support it. If I was going to do something in the currency markets, I would take a good strong look at any pullbacks in the euro. I think it will become a good strong currency. Some of these countries are really starting to pick up a little bit more steam, and I think if the U.S. economy has any tough times, be it a terrorist attack or just maybe even another recession, the euro is really going to pick up a lot of steam against the dollar, and you might get a transfer of some of these oil countries moving to a euro, which would push it up even further. I can't go over everything because I don't know your situation. You can give us a phone call and get that information and kind of read through some of those things. I hope that part has helped you out a little bit.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, fine. And you want to get that telephone number out again and the website where people can reach you?
Sure. The number is 888-302-7111. That's 888-302-7111. And again, it's our free gold investor's guide and the audio tape, Interest Rates and the Gold Boom Ahead. Although the title is a little misleading, it goes through the other investments with stocks, bonds, and real estate and what some of the forecasts are there on a forward-moving basis. Again, if everyone that calls could mention that they heard it on this program so that it goes out free of charge, we normally charge $29 for the tape. So there's no obligation. Give us a call, 888-302-7111. And I just want to say one other thing. I congratulate the last caller, and I'm sorry that his health is failing. Sounds like a great guy.
He is. In fact, Bill's a regular listener, and we've been talking to him off and on. I've never met him, but I feel he's a friend. And we've been talking for several years here on the radio program. Well, you know, the problems that America faces financially are simply because we've turned our back on what our founding fathers said, and that was that all currencies should be based upon gold and silver. And, of course, they knew what had happened. They'd studied the history of fiat money systems, starting with ancient Greece, and then what happened to ancient Rome, and certainly what had happened during the first fiat money system in France in 1716, and the second fiat money system in 1789. Of course, they knew what had happened at the time of the American Revolution when they printed the continental dollars, and pretty soon they weren't worth the continental. You have to have something behind your currency because you really can't trust politicians to do it right. In fact, we see this in Washington, D.C. today. They're spending money as if it's going out of style because it's not their money. And all they have to do is just simply turn on the printing presses or buy it. But one day the day of reckoning comes, and a lot of people are talking about this massive debt that we have, and not only the personal debt and corporate debt, but our national debt, and then, of course, all of these other debts that we have for Social Security and of course, for Medicare. They're talking about something like somewhere between $44 and $50 trillion that we owe, and there is absolutely no way to pay it off. What's the background there?
Well, you know, as a precious metals company, a lot of people believe, a lot of times I think, that you're a doomsday type of person. And I had to be the only precious metals company out there in 1999 where everybody thought, well, not everybody, but a lot of people thought the world was going to come to an end, that said, you know, I just don't see it. And, you know, so this it doesn't concern me that much. If you want to own precious metals because of that reason, great, but own it for a good fundamental reason also. The thing that scares me in this economy this time around is exactly that, debt. A lot of people have talked about debt, but I don't believe that they understand what debt really means in this economy where we are right now. Interest rates take about 40 years to go up. If we look back in 1964, interest rates were about 1.25%, 1.5%. They went all the way to 15%. They've come all the way down. Both of those cycles take about 20 years or so, 20, 22 years. Debt is a major problem, and when we come back from this break, I can explain it a little bit better.
All right, fine. Well, there's something known as the Kondraty cycle. It's a 50-year cycle, and it really gets into debt, and it's worked out by a Russian economist many years ago who said capitalism is the greatest system in the world, but every 50 years or so, it collapses, and then it comes right back again. Of course, in the Holy Scriptures, where we're told that there should be a 50-year jubilee, and that every 50 years you forgive the debts and, of course, write things off and start in all over again. The Lord was pretty smart. Unfortunately, our leaders haven't learned about that, and they've had this continuing spiral going since about 1940. It's time for a contraction, and, well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, because they've turned their back on the admission that the debtor owes the money. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and for our last segment of our program, our guest is Kevin DeMeriden, and we're certainly talking about what's happening financially, and we're talking about the real danger of debt, because certainly we have so many people who are head over heels in debt. Somebody had called and asked if a young couple just married has a certain amount of money, not very well off, but they want to know whether to buy a house now or perhaps to wait a couple of years to buy a house. What would you tell them?
Well, usually when you buy your first house, it typically does not mean you're going to live there for an extended period of time. Usually you start a family, you outgrow that first house. If they were purchasing their second house and they said, we're going to live in this house and it's going to be our dream house and so on and so forth, then fine. Go out and purchase your home. Be happy with it, but do not think of it as an investment. For a first-time homeowner right now, I would say absolutely not. I wouldn't want anyone to get into the real estate market, with the exception of possibly a few states that haven't done extremely well in the middle of the country. There aren't that many good deals out there. Now, if there's a foreclosure or something like that, okay, that would be a different story. But for the true market value that people are asking for their homes right now, it's astronomical. It just does not make any sense to me, especially on a first-time homeowner.
And so what you're really seeing is this debt bubble, this home bubble, this property bubble, that the prices have kept going up and up, but with no relationship at all to value.
No, not at all. People are not purchasing a home anymore. They're purchasing a payment. They're saying, how much can I afford? And that's what they're basing it on. They're not looking at a home and saying, that's large enough for my family. I can raise a family there. I can be proud of this home, and that's the one I'm going to pick. They're looking at it as, I need to keep up with the Joneses. How much of a mortgage can I afford? They've got no interest loans now with no principal, and they've come up with all these ways to people to purchase a bigger, better home. And people need to get back, in my opinion, when this real estate market comes back down, people will start purchasing a home again as opposed to a payment. So right now, I think there's going to be some good deals come up in the next maybe 24 months to 36 months, where people just cannot make their house payment, and then step in and purchase yourself a good home that you're going to be proud of, and I think you're going to get a much better deal on it.
Well, maybe we can learn a little something from what happened over in Japan, where property values have dropped about 80%. Now, I don't know if it'll be that bad here, but I think that I agree with Kevin completely. We're in for some difficult times. Well, I really want to thank you so much for being with us this evening. It's always a pleasure having you here as a guest at Radio Liberty.
Fantastic. I appreciate it also, and it was a lot of great callers. So thank you. Hope everybody calls and gets the information, and you have a great night.
Fine. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and again, that was Kevin DeMeritt, and his telephone number is 888-302-7111. That's 888-302-7111, and certainly Kevin is one of our supporters, and they have a very, very good
reputation.
So we just want to suggest, if you'd like to get a copy of our August newsletter, which is completed, it'll be out in about 10 days, and we'll tell you what Warren Buffett has written, because we've simply taken Warren Buffett's writings things, what he thinks about what's going on in the world, and then what Alan Greenspan really thinks about what's going on in the world, what he wrote back in 1966. You can pull it down on the Internet by Greenspan 1966 under Google, or, of course, you can go ahead and get our newsletter. We'd be glad to send it to you free of charge. Of course, we hope many of you out there would want to subscribe to the newsletter, or even better, join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day as we reach out across America, trying to get people not only to see what's happening financially, see what's happening militarily, see what's happening educationally and culturally and ideologically, but to understand there's a spiritual battle taking place for the hearts and souls of men, and that we're losing this battle because people don't understand that everything has a spiritual component. We're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on the sands of Iraq, on the bloody sands of Iraq, being played out in the cultural and ideological and battlefields. And so until the American people can really understand what this is about, we're going to continue losing that battle. But I think that hopefully we're going to reach people. I know from the response we're getting from across America that more and more people are listening, and we've picked up some new stations in Texas that are hearing us on a regular basis, and we cover the West Coast pretty well, and we cover at least upstate New York fairly well, and throughout the South and the Middle West, and with your help, we'll continue expanding our ministry. Now, a couple of things we do want to mention. One of them would be that there is legislation. It's California legislation, admittedly, but it's Senate Bill 96. And if you're out there in the listening audience, we hope that you will call your state senator or your state assemblyman and say, vote no on SB 96. Why? Because it will forcibly fluoridate every water supply in the state of California. Even if the people have voted against it, how can they do that? Well, they're just going to go ahead and do it, and they're going to poison you and your children. And if you do not know what fluoride does, you need to get our 4 tape set on fluorine, fluoride, and you'll find, of course, the studies show the profound impact it has on the brains of children. And it really does have an impact on the brains of children. Just as Ritalin actually shrinks the brains of children. So children who take fluoride lose about 10 to 15 points of their IQ. This is well known. The people who are pushing this know exactly what it does. They know it's carcinogen. They know it decreases fertility. They know what it does to bones, and it decreases hip fractures in older people. And there are repeated studies that show in areas where there's fluoridated water, why more women get, almost twice as many women get fractured hips. But you see, they really don't care because they have a different agenda. Because we're talking about people who march to a different drumbeat, who worship a different god. So let me encourage you to call and let people know about this effort to forcibly fluoridate our water, whether the people want it or not. Well, it would be great for us because we'll sell you a big Berkey water filter. And, of course, but I really don't want to have to do that. I don't want you to have to filter your own water simply to get away from the fluoride that the government is mandating. That's SB 96. If you live here in California, call your state assemblyman, call your state senator right now, because this legislation is going to be heard in the next week or two. SB 96. And then, of course, we remind you about the meeting we're going to have, an all-day meeting on the 6th of November here. And people from all across the country, we expect to come, perhaps from across the world, all day long here, and at lunch will be served, and we'll bring in excellent speakers. Here on the 6th of November, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 to make a reservation. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because this is truly a spiritual battle. And what energizes these wicked people is the dark side. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we hope we're going to have Dr. Karen Ephraim with us this evening. And Karen works with the educational group up in Minnesota, Alan Quist. There used to be Mr. Edco, now, of course, the Education Watch Group. And she's going to be speaking there at the meeting they're going to be having on the 4th and 5th of November. Actually, they're going to be competing with this. We'd hope to have one of their speakers down with us, but maybe we'll have him next year. But right now, Dr. Ephraim's going to be talking with us on the screening and drugging of the American principles of children, the screening and drugging of the children of this country. Now, Dr. Ephraim is a physician. You were a pediatrician, weren't you, Karen?
Yes.
All right, fine. Are you retired now, or are you still practicing?
I'm retired.
All right, fine. Well, that's a good thing to be at the present time with what's going on in medicine, but at least we know that you're right on top of this. And of course, you're very concerned about this mental health edict that's been put out by the current Bush administration that's going to require mental health screening of all children and the teachers, and eventually this is really going to be screening, mental health screening of everybody in America. Why are they doing something like this? Certainly, why is the federal government worried about our mental health? That is the sort of thing that they do in Soviet Union or in communist China, but the federal government is not to have anything to do with our health. They're not our paternalistic figure. They're not our father. They're supposed to be our servant, not our master.
That's true. I think that there are several issues going on. One is profit of the pharmaceutical industry, because they were involved in making several recommendations to the President's New Freedom Commission, including the list of drugs that would be used to treat these purported mental illnesses.
Now, they called it the New Freedom Initiative. Why? What is it, the forcibly mandating a mental health screening have to do with freedom? That seems to be the antithesis of freedom.
Well, it does. It's one of its purposes is supposed to be to help people that have already been diagnosed with mental health live the freest life possible. But it's actually become kind of an Orwellian joke.
Now, I bet they're laughing that the American people are foolish enough to go along with this.
Well, I don't think they are foolish enough to go along with this. Fortunately, I've seen a huge outcry about a number of things related to this. They're trying to merge mental health screening with academic standards in Illinois. And the legislators there are getting an earful from the public and saying, you know, they will not put up with this. And the Illinois legislature is trying to backpedal and say, oh no, we didn't mean to make this sound mandatory. It's all voluntary. Blah, blah, blah.
It's sort of like the voluntary compulsory health, voluntary compulsory service. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Karen Ephraim. We're talking about the New Freedom Mental Health Initiative. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Karen Ephraim. And you're saying that in the Illinois, why there is quite some certainly reacting from the people, putting pressure on the legislature, saying we don't want this?
Right. There was a series of public hearings to implement the Children's Mental Health Act, which was passed, unfortunately, by almost unanimously in the Illinois legislature, and it was to do the implementation plan. But when people started looking at the implementation plan, that would require mental health screening and make it mandatory for all children 0 to 18 and all pregnant women, and to merge that with the academic standards, there was major concern.
All right, fine. Well, now, is the legislature going to back away from this? After all, they passed the legislation, but of course, as my good friend Senator Bill Richardson here said in California, in the book he wrote entitled, "You really don't think we read those bills, do you?" I really think that this is what's going on.
I hope it is.
Well, no, I think that they don't read the bills. I think that they depend on somebody else. One of their buddies says, "This is a great bill, and why don't you vote for this, and I'll vote for your bill." And suddenly we find that they've sold away our freedom.
Right. Well, I think that's part of it. And I'm hoping that the good groups in Illinois, like Eagle Forum and Concerned Women for America, will be following up. They wrote some excellent editorials in the Illinois Leader, which is a conservative website that pretty much broke the story on this.
And I think really through the internet and through talk radio, well, we can get people listening and understanding that these programs are designed to really harm our children, because the solution is, well, we've got to give them a pill. And some of these pills are deadly as far as, well, I'm going to let you talk about that. That's your field.
Well,
what's wrong with all these medicines? Aren't they here to help the children?
Well, there's never been a single long-term study anywhere to show the safety or effectiveness of either the stimulants like Ritalin for attention deficit disorder or the antidepressants for depression like Prozac and Zoloft and Paxil and those types of drugs. And in fact, the government of Britain has banned all their use of all of them except Prozac in children. And the FDA was...
Hold that thought for just a minute. We don't want to bring our other stations on board. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Karen Efron, she's just saying the danger of the drugs that we're giving to our children, and that's Great Britain, that they've banned almost all the drugs except Prozac for children. But, Karen, it's my understanding that even there's serious considerations about Prozac actually increasing the incidence of suicide among the children that it is being forcibly given to.
Yes, there is a problem with Prozac, but that's a huge step that Britain has taken compared to the United States, who suppressed the information, the testimony of one of their own medical officers who did find that same problem, a 2-to-1 increase in suicidal thoughts and suicidal attempts in children that were taking the drugs compared to taking placebo or sugar pill. And the FDA suppressed that. And then a congressman, James Greenwood from Pennsylvania, was supposed to hold a hearing on it in July, and lo and behold, he decided to quote-unquote postpone the hearing and step down, resign his seat, and become an employee of a pharmaceutical lobbying organization for the very organizations that, or for the various companies that he was going to investigate.
Well, I think it's very interesting, and I was reading an article here about this Dr. Andrew Mossholder, who
right.
is a senior epidemiologist at the Food and Drug Administration, who assesses the safety of medications, and he found that in 22 studies that had been done, peer-reviewed study, that children given antidepressants were nearly twice as likely to become suicidal as those who were given placebos. So his bosses, of course, didn't want that information. They suppressed it. They wanted, of course, another study, and so the one was done at Columbia University, which showed exactly the same thing, And, of course, this information is being very carefully suppressed, although there has been something in the New York Times I've read pointing out this very, very real danger. And the people in government, so many of whom, of course, expect to go to work for the drug companies when they retire, and so they'll get the government pension, then they'll get the drug company salary, and then they'll get all sorts of goodies and bonuses from them. They're really sacrificing the health of the American people for their own personal advantage. I think there ought to be a law against anybody who has worked for government ever going to work for one of the companies that they've supervised.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And that whole hearing mess with Andrew Mossholder was ridiculous because they wasted taxpayer dollars to do another study when they didn't need to. And they've delayed now for almost a year compared to Britain for giving any kind of warnings or banning the use in children. And we don't know how many other children have had suicidal thoughts or violent actions or committed suicide in that year that they've been dragging their feet.
And, of course, we know what happened with Kevin Harris at Columbine.
Right.
He was on Luvox, was one of these same family of products. And, of course, he had all these truly genocidal, these killer instincts came out on him. He saw nothing wrong with killing his fellow classmates. And, of course, this is a victim of Luvox.
Right. And Kip Kinkel of Springfield, Oregon, who killed his own parents and then several children at Springfield, Oregon, was on an antidepressant, and so was Jason Hoffman, who did a school shooting in San Diego.
Right, of course, if we're going to use the same analogy that they use for weapons, maybe we ought to just certainly say, well, if we took away all antidepressants, we'd stop the killing. That would be a totally a foolish thing to do. There may be certain people where these are helpful, but certainly not in children. Are there any studies at all to show that they're safe in children who react differently physiologically than adults?
No. And you can't even accurately diagnose children because they have such rapid and frequent and numerous developmental changes. So putting kids on antidepressants is just silly. There's just no good evidence.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Ritalin, because we've talked with you about that before, but I really think it's such an important subject. My understanding, there's something like 8 million children on Ritalin today. Is that right? Is that way out of line?
No, it's not. It's somewhere between 6 and 12 million.
It's between 6. So we really don't know how many of our children are on this. And, of course, since attention deficit disorder is much more common in boys than girls, isn't it?
Right.
And so it's probably a very significant point. I think what we have 56 million children, something like that. So while we're talking, an awful lot of boys are being put on these drugs. Now, what is the long-term effect of that? I've heard that it actually causes stunting of their growth and shrinking of their brains. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, it is true, both because it suppresses growth hormone, so it decreases overall body growth and therefore brain growth. And there's significant concern about cortical atrophy or shriveling of the gray matter of the brain, similar to what happens in Alzheimer's disease.
Is this, of course, a reversible condition, or is this something more or less permanent? Do we know?
Well, there was a study done in 1986 that showed that about half of 50 early 20-year-olds who had been on Ritalin in their young childhood had this cortical atrophy condition. And they really don't know the long-term effects.
Well, does it influence their ability to think or their emotions, or how does it affect?
It absolutely does affect it. It can cause depression. It can cause mania or and violence. It can cause memory problems and actually inhibit learning. James Swanson, who worked with the Department of Education via the University of California, said, and he is a proponent of using Ritalin, said that this kind of cognitive toxicity is present in up to 40% of people taking Ritalin at a normal dose.
I had some fellow write to me, and he'd seen an article on my webpage against Ritalin, and he said that, you know, he has a superior intelligence, so he thinks he belongs to that group of people that, you know, on genius, he says he's been taking Ritalin ever since he was just a child, and he's doing great on it. How would you respond to him?
Well, he may be the exception. One. He may be the exception or the lucky one, because there has never been a single study in the literature of 50 years since Ritalin has been on the market that shows long-term academic or social benefit. Now, it may cause some improvement in, for a few months, and it may improve rote behavior, you know, sitting at a class in a class and filling out worksheets, but it does that at the price of spontaneity and social interaction and play, which is not something that you want to do to a young child.
Well, now, what about the propensity for addiction or for moving on to something else? Because doesn't this work through basically the same chemical route as cocaine?
It does. The studies are actually conflicting about the long-term tendency to go on to substance abuse. There are some studies that say that that does happen, and Ritalin and those type of stimulant drugs are being abused in high schools and colleges. But there are also some studies, epidemiological studies, that say that it actually lessens the tendency. And I don't totally understand all those studies, and I haven't analyzed them in depth, but they're out there.
Somebody recently, I read an article, and I don't know whether it's true or not. I wanted to see if you'd heard of it, that Lisa Minnelli had written about her mother, Judy Garland, saying that she'd been started on some of these drugs when she was doing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and she was just at that point where she was going to begin to mature, so they were giving her, and I thought it was supposed to be Ritalin, because they didn't want her to go through puberty too quickly. They wanted to get the movie finished, and of course that this was the beginning of her drug dependency. Have you ever heard anything like that?
I had heard that there were problems, that Judy Garland had issues with drug dependency, but I don't know the details, so
all right,
I can't
fine.
Really comment.
Well, maybe somebody out there in the listening audience has read the book by Lisa Minnelli. I have not, and so I don't want you to take what I'm saying as gospel. If I haven't read the book, I'm not going to say that what somebody told me is true, and I was sort of hoping that Dr. Efferin, but maybe somebody out there in the listening audience has read the Lisa Minnelli's book and can tell us what it really says about her mother, and of course being started on drugs when she was making Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Well, you know, of course, this is really a terrible problem among our young people, and the children get off of the Ritalin, after they've gone through the college. We know that certainly this is one of the drugs of choice among college students, because, of course, that they can take the Ritalin, they can stay up all night, study, they're really jazzed up for the examination. Do they eventually get off of these drugs, or do they more or less continue on them through life? Do we have any way of knowing?
It depends on the child and how long they've been on it and the individual metabolism. Now, stimulants can be slowly and carefully weaned off, and kids can get off of them. And there are always recommendations from physicians to do drug holidays and, weekends off and the summer off. So some kids do okay with it. But some don't, and some have problems, and there are also problems, significant problems, with dependency and getting off of the Prozac-like antidepressants.
Well, of course, this is the problem, is that do we really want to treat our children with drugs to try to keep them from having problems? You know, we never used to have. How did our kids get through life before we had Ritalin and before we had Prozac to give them? You know, most of the people grew up to be healthy, productive citizens. Question is, how many of the people we have on the drugs now won't grow up at all? We'll be victims of suicide or some other tragic situation. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Karen Efferin. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Karen Ephraim, and we're talking about the President's New Freedom Mental Health Initiative. And this has been introduced, and is this law, is this being put into executive order? How is it coming about?
Right now, it is just recommendations from a presidential commission. And what they do with it is up to the Department of Health and Human Services and Congress.
Now, will Congress have to vote on this, or can the President introduce this just based upon the recommendations of his Mental Health Commission?
He can do some of it via the grants that the Department of Health and Human Services puts out, but actually there's $20 million in the Labor, Health and Human Services, and Education Appropriations Bill that's coming up in the fall that are called State Incentive Transformation Grants that are going to be used to put these recommendations into place. And we're trying to work with several members of Congress to take away that $20 million so that the recommendations are not implemented.
Well, now, of course, is this committee, this mental health task force, whatever it is this fairly well dominated, or at least represented by people from the drug company who stand to make countless millions or billions of dollars from the drugging of our people?
Well, there was actually an article in the British Medical Journal that said that the people that developed the treatment plan, which was actually came from Texas while President Bush was governor there, called the Texas Medication Algorithm Project, were heavily influenced by the pharmaceutical companies. Dr. Peter J. Wyden, who was a member of that project's expert consensus panel, charges that the guidelines are based on, quote, opinions, not data, and that bias due to funding sources undermines the credibility of the guidelines since, quote, most of the guidelines authors have received support from the pharmaceutical industry.
And you think that because the doctor gets large sums of money or support or funding from the pharmaceutical industry, that might influence his ultimate decision and his ultimate position?
I think that these people on these panels are getting very undue influence from the pharmaceutical companies, and I think doctors in practice are also getting some, but the problem that doctors in practice are also dealing with is that the pharmaceutical companies are allowed by the FDA to not publish studies that are negative.
And so all you get is the studies on one side, you don't get anything on the other, and the impression is all the studies are good, and they simply suppress anything that's detrimental?
That is right. And there are several editorials and recommendations coming from people like Marcia Angel, who was the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and one of the editors of the Journal of the American Medical Association, that are saying that the federal government needs to have a database of all the studies and cannot allow the drug companies any discretion in what they publish. They have to publish all the studies,
all right,
positive or negative.
Be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and the great tragedy is that science, instead of being used to determine the truth, is being used to push specific points of view. Science is a search for the truth. Well, it used to be a search for the truth. Today it's, well, how can we come up with some sort of a study that will justify the fellow who's picking up the tabs and paying us so much money? Because if we don't get grants from the drug companies, we're not going to be able to continue doing our work. We're not going to be able to continue writing our papers. And within academia, why, it's publish or perish. Would that be a fairly accurate statement?
Yes.
Do you know how to get hold of Dr. Angel, of Maria Angel?
I can get you, I can email you the article that she put out, and you can put it on your website.
Go ahead.
Another organization that your readers might be interested in is the Alliance for Human Research Protection, Vera Sheroff, out of New York. She has done just a tremendous amount of research into the problems with the pharmaceutical industry and the corruption of scientific research and the unfair use of human subjects and this whole thing with the antidepressants and Ritalin and Illinois and the New Freedom Commission and all of that. She's done a wonderful job.
Do you have a copy of that article out of the British Medical Journal by Jean Lenzer that you were just speaking of?
Yep, I sure do.
Well, would you mind getting that off to me, too? Because I really would like to have this information so we can make this available to our listeners so that they will understand that their children's health is really in danger. And these people aren't interested in helping our children. They're interested in screening our children and getting them onto medications. And you say, why would anybody want to do that? And I would simply suggest you read the book entitled Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. And then read the book by Bertrand Russell. It was written in 1951, The Impact of Science on Society. And you'll understand that these people have a different worldview, a different agenda, and they want to bring the people under the control of the state. And anybody who doesn't want to go along with that, of course, will be an enemy of the state. Or you might say there must be with the terrorists. You're either with us or against us, and if you object to what's going on, why, you're going to be in real trouble. As incredible as it seems, it's all written out in the books. The Brave New World by Aldous Huxley talks about this wonderful new medication they're going to have. It's going to be called Soma, and everybody's going to be taking it. They're going to feel better. And then, of course, Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society, we talks about how we're going to have to bring everybody under control. We're going to have to change the attitude and outlook of our children. We're going to have to, of course, get them all compliant and going along with the state. And, of course, everybody will be miserable, but they won't realize they're miserable because the government is going to tell them they're happy. And because the government's going to tell them they're happy, they're going to believe what the government says. Incredible. Written 52 years ago, and yet, of course, this is exactly what appears to be going on today. With this suggestion, we now have mental health screening of all of our children and of the teachers, and how are they going to get the adults to be screened as well, Karen?
Well, they may use the way that Illinois is using it and requiring it at least first for pregnant women, for all pregnant women.
Why would they do that? I mean, they don't require, do they require HIV testing for pregnant women? I don't know whether they do or not in Illinois, but I know here in California they've never required prenatal testing, required prenatal testing for HIV. Why do they want to do mental health screening?
Ostensibly to prevent postpartum depression and psychosis, such as happened in Andrea Yates, who drowned her five children in the bathtub, and Susan Smith, who strapped her toddlers into the car and pushed the car into the lake. It's that sort of thing.
Well, of course it is, but of course Andrea Yates was on lots of medication. And
she was already on medication.
That was the real problem that she had.
Yep. And she was probably made worse by the cocktail that she was on. But I just wanted to comment on what you were saying a minute ago about the government control. In that the danger, especially of Illinois, is that they're combining mental health with the academic standards. And pretty soon, attitudes, values, beliefs, and behavior are going to be judged for mental health, and it's already happening. School officials in Ithaca, New York are requiring that first and second graders be graded on their tolerance. The Department of Education, U.S. Department of Education Safe and Drug-Free Schools Program is developing truth squads where classmates are supposed to spy on each other based on their words and actions.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or out across America at 464. I should say out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Our guest is Dr. Karen Ephraim. Of course, she's comes from the great state of Minnesota, and she works there with Alan Quist and Michael Chapman and so many of our other good friends up there, the Julie Quist. And, of course, they're trying to educate the people. Dr. Michelle Brofman is on the state Senate there. Of course, a voice of reason in a piece, legislature gone mad. But I understand that Michelle has really had a tremendous impact in getting at least some people to begin thinking up there about the impact of some of these pieces of legislation they're passing. Is that, would be that a fair statement?
Oh, that's a tremendously fair statement. She is just the most wonderful legislator, and she's extremely brave, courageous, and principled, and will stand even when she has the entire Democratic caucus against her, which you would expect, but also when her fellow Republicans are cowards. She'll be out there even if she's the only one. But she has worked to get good standards in Minnesota and get rid of our profile of learning. This year she championed a constitutional amendment to define marriage as between one man and one woman, and took a tremendous amount of abuse from the gay lobby that tried to get people to boycott the town where she's from. And still she stood there. And she is going to be speaking at our conference that you so graciously mentioned on November 5th and 6th.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give it a plug if you'd like to. Tell people about the conference and how they can get in touch with the people.
Our conference is going to be Friday and Saturday, November 5th and 6th, right after the election. We are going to make it a leadership conference and open it to people all across the country, groups that want to try and do the same sort of things with their standards that we were able to do in Minnesota, and to also work against the mental health initiatives, school to work, and talk about some of the other things that are going on. And so we're going to do some both teaching and then some training on grassroots organizing.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Karen Ephraim. And, of course, Karen was a pediatrician. She's now is working full-time trying to educate people up there in the Minnesota area about what's really going on. We've been talking a little bit about the conference that's going to be held up there in Minnesota on the 5th and 6th of November, when they're going to have a leadership conference. And I'm sure that they'll welcome people from all across that part of the country. They're going to be excellent speakers. I know Karen speaking. Michael Chapman will be speaking, certainly one of a couple of our favorite people, and Professor Alan Quist will be speaking. Should be an excellent conference. How can people get in touch with you or with the people who are putting on the conference if they'd like to come?
They can do it via our websites, www.edwatch.org and edaction.org, and they can call our office at 952-361-4931.
Give the number one more time.
952-361-4931.
Okay, fine. And they're a fine organization. We certainly support them, and we have all of the people that we've mentioned, Michelle Brofman, Senator Brofman, and, of course, Michael Chapman and Karen and both Julie and Alan Quist and other members of this organization as our guests here frequently on Radio Liberty, because we want you to get their information. They're doing a great job of exposing the No Child Left Behind system. And, of course, No Child Left Behind is simply a makeover. It started out as outcome-based education. Well, when people began to realize what this is really all about, the transformation of education and the dumbing down of our children, they called it Goals 2000. And then when people began to understand it was simply outcome-based education by another name, they called it workforce education. And now, of course, it's been federally mandated. It's called No Child Left Behind. Oh, what a wonderful idea. What they really mean is no child is going to get away from us. We're going to dumb them all down and change their attitudes and values and beliefs so they'll be good little world citizens of this wonderful society we have. We've got a great four-tape set. It's called Fed Ed. And you'll hear actually many of the people we just talked about, Senator Brofman and Michael Chapman and Alan Quist and Julie Quist, I think. And I don't think you're on that four-tape set. Karen, I think we have you on another four tapes dealing with Ritalin, but certainly we have a book called Fed Ed. You need to understand what this is really all about, the deliberate dumbing down of our children. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the parents ever to find out. So let's get back, though, to our subject for this evening, which is the compulsory mental health screening being sold under the name of the New Freedom Initiative, Mental Health Initiative. Oh, isn't that a wonderful slogan? The New Freedom Mental Health Initiative. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Give us a call and we'd love to get your thought on this. Incidentally, if you are listening to us on shortwave out there, we'd like to know whether or not you're getting better reception on 7.535 or 7.315. So we want to know whether you're getting your best reception, 7.535 or 7.315. You don't have to go on the air, but just give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we'd like to know where you're getting your best reception so we can decide which one of those we want to stay on. And again, our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call and you have a question for Karen, is again that same number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. For Karen, certainly in Illinois, the people are aware of what's going on, and is there a clamor picking up across the country as people begin to realize what these planners and the drug company and the psychiatrist, and I think the truly wicked people, have in mind for our children?
Yes, there is. Fortunately, there are plenty of good groups out there. I mentioned Vera Sheroff's, the Alliance for Human Research Protection, and that's at ahrp.org. And then there is the International Center for the Study of Psychiatry and Psychology at icfpp.org. And that was founded by Dr. Peter Bregan, who I think you've interviewed on your show.
Yes, but we've lost his telephone number. Do you have his current number?
Well, I do. I think he's moved on to Cornell.
Okay, fine, because he was at Johns Hopkins, I guess.
Right.
He moved from there. Well, we'll call you off the air and to get that information. But
yeah.
Dr. Pragan's done a great job on speaking back to Ritalin and pointing out the terrible dangers of this.
Right, and your drug may be your problem, and the antidepressant fact book and talking back to Prozac are all drug books that he's written about the dangers of these drugs. And he's great information. And they have a conference coming up in October in the New York City area, if people are interested specifically in that type of thing, because it's both for professionals and for lay people that are dealing with, you know, coercion in psychiatry.
Well, you know, one of the things that really bothers me is that so many of our teachers now are recommending that the children take drugs. And, of course, then when the parents don't want to put them on the drugs, why, they called it child abuse. In fact, I was reading an article where a couple of children, parents objected violently to their children being put onto these psychotropic drugs, and of course they were coerced into it, and a couple of these children actually committed suicide because of the drugs they were on.
Well, not only committed suicide, but also died of toxicity related to the drugs that they were forced to put their children on.
Do the parents have any recourse against the schools for this? The threats, you know, of child abuse, we're going to take the children away from you. You don't have a right as a parent to determine. We are from the government. We know what's best for your children.
We're trying. There are several states that have passed laws that say that schools can no longer charge parents with child abuse or neglect for refusing psychiatric medication. Texas is probably the best one that I've seen. Minnesota has also done one, but it's weaker than I would like. And then Connecticut and Virginia, and I think California had one in the legislature, but I'm not sure that it passed. And then on the federal level, there's the Child Medication Safety Act, which was offered in the House last year by Congressman Max Burns of Georgia, and it says that schools cannot coerce parents into putting their children on drugs, but unfortunately the way it's written, it only covers drugs on the controlled substances list, which covers the Ritalin and the Adderall type stimulants, but it doesn't cover the antidepressants or the antipsychotic drugs. But at least it's a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, even though it passed the House 425-1, it is stalled in the Senate by Senator Edward Kennedy, and we're trying really hard to get it passed before the end of the year, but I'm not sure that it's going to happen.
Well, Kennedy is certainly one of the wickedest people there, and what really bothers me is this whole No Child Left Behind bill was Senator Edward Kennedy's bill that the Bush administration got through for him. I never have understood that.
I haven't either. I think he was so desperate for a bill on education that he was willing to make a pact with the devil, if you will, to get something passed. But it's really concerning how much this mental health stuff is in the No Child Left Behind Act, and where it also came out of Goals 2000. There's actually plenty of places that it talks about mental health in the schools and screening in the schools in No Child Left Behind. And then there's also a section that Senator Kennedy had stuck in there called the Foundations for Learning Act, which wants to do mental health for children 0 to 7 with such vague criteria as exposed to violence, exposed to parental depression, being kicked out of daycare, as if children need to be treated for drugs for being upset that their parents have left them in daycare for, you know, 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day.
You know, one of the things that really bothers me and really very, very concerning, although it's a little off the subject, but that is this whole idea that they want the state to begin to take over control of our children as soon as they come home from the hospital after being born and have people supervising them and then get them into daycare centers, you know, at 3 years of age to get them away from their parents to begin to mold their reality. And there really is this program, there's this philosophy, and it goes back to the time of Plato, but more modern these psychiatrists have been saying, we've got to get the children away from the parents. After all, every child who enters school, kindergarten, is mentally ill because, of course, they believe in God and family and country. We've got to cure this sort of thing. And the solution is programs like we have here in California, Success by Six, and the whole idea is to get them away from the parents and under government control earlier. Are you running into that where you are?
Oh, it's terrible. We actually have a man from the Federal Reserve in Minneapolis who's going around the state and around the country saying what a good investment it is to have states be involved in early childhood education. And early childhood education really started in a big way from the federal government with Goals 2000 in 1994. Because goal number one of Goals 2000 says all children will start school ready to learn. Well, ready to learn doesn't mean ready to learn issues like, you know, math and reading and history. It means ready to learn the government indoctrination that they plan to to put forward. And actually, the national group that certifies early childhood programs and all Head Start centers with more than 20 children has these curriculum books that are just absolutely radical. It has things like acceptance of homosexuality, fear and loathing of the military, radical environmentalism, radical feminism, and it's just appalling.
Now, what age group is this going to be?
3, 4, and 5-year-old children.
3, 4, and 5-year-old children. So we're really going to start indoctrinating them in how wonderful homosexuality. Why would we even bring up sexuality at this time? This is long even before the latent period starts. This is going to do nothing but serious psychological harm to those children.
Absolutely. Absolutely it will. And this kind of program actually spawned an anti-war protest by preschoolers at Berkeley last year, before the Gulf War, before the current Iraqi war.
In what way did it actually get the... Because certainly you're not going to have your 3, 4, and 5-year-olds out there, are you?
There were 4-year-old children.
Really, 4-year-old
children? I have photographs of them holding signs that said, you know, things like, no war for oil, and don't fight, we don't, and, you know, use your words and things like that.
Well, of course, the thing is, probably these poor kids can't even read the signs that they're holding. They're just being exploited. But that is really the ultimate in exploitation, is this effort of government to get the children away. And, of course, we're always told it's for the children. No, it's not for the children. The purpose is they want to transform society, and you transform society by getting to the children very early. Rousseau wrote about this. Rousseau, back in the time of Voltaire, and of course, then we saw the... beginning of this with Robert Owen about 1820 when he came to America. He was an Englishman, a son of a very wealthy textile manufacturer, and he set up a socialist commune at New Harmony in Indiana, and it didn't work. All these wonderful ideas of course, communism just didn't work. The people were individual, and so they set up a secret society. Robert Owens, of course, one of the people in the secret society was a man named Orestes Brownstein. He eventually broke, and he told about this secret society, and their purpose was to take over education. Started back in the 1820s, been going on ever since then, and they finally got control of our educational system. But they didn't do it on their own. They can thank people like Ted Kennedy and like, of course, our present president, who's pushing these same identical programs, this whole idea that you transform society by transforming the minds and the hearts and the souls of the children. And my fear is that they're going to accomplish this with these massive programs if the good people in America don't take a stand against them.
Well, you are right that the good people of this country need to stand up, and they also need to realize not only the harm of the drugs, the fact that the programs don't work, that, you know, they need to realize all of those things, but they also need to realize that a lot of these things also came from international agreements. Things like UNESCO and the World Declaration on Education for All from 1990 in Thailand, and then the Dakar Agreement in 2000, are pushing all of these kinds of mental health ideas. And the same thing with the World Health Organization, which was started by a man named Brock Chisholm, who thought that religion is the seat of all evil and that children shouldn't be exposed to religion from their parents because it causes things like world wars.
Of course, really, these people are anti-Christian. They're anti-Christian, many of them, because they have a different religion, a different worldview. But the trouble is that they get themselves into key positions, and in those positions, why they work to begin to alter the outlook of the people. We've got Matt calling from Michigan. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Fine, Dr. Stan. She brought up the international agreement matter, so I can conclude that it's the United Nations protocols, I presume, on behalf of the what can only be described as, I would have to say, the Luciferian secret society fascists.
All right, fine. This is coming from the United Nations, or sort of this all is being coordinated at an international level?
It is coming from UNESCO, which is the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, and unfortunately our returning to that organization after Reagan took us out was Bush's price to pay for Colin Powell's support for the war in Iraq.
All right, fine. Well, I think the worst thing we could possibly have done was return there to UNESCO. Matt, anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Yes, please. Ron Paul, Texas, originally introduced H.R. 1146, the American Sovereignty Restoration Act, which called for booting out the United Nations and terminating all American involvement in any of its agencies.
Well, we're also working with Congressman Paul to defund these grants for the New Freedom Commission, so he's a great guy.
Thanks very much, Matt. We're going to have to let you go. We're going to have to go to a break. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, of course, is Dr. Karen Ephraim. Karen, do you have a website or telephone number you want to get out for yourself?
No, I work through the through EdWatch. All of the things that I've written about the New Freedom Commission and the Illinois mess are on edwatch.org and edaction.org. And any questions can certainly go through our office number, which is 952-361-4931.
All right, and of course, Karen's got an excellent article that's up on EdWatch right now. In fact, I just pulled that down, so I recommend that to you. And you can go to their website and pull it down and getting this information together on this educational program, this so-called New Freedom Mental Health Program. And certainly, Matt had called in from Michigan talking about this Illuminist fascist plot. Well, you can call it what you want to. I call it the Brotherhood of Darkness. Are these people who believe in world government because they worship a different god. And they're really not interested in whether we want this new world order or not. If you go back and you read the book that H.G. Wells wrote, it was about 1930. It's called The New World Order, and he said, millions will hate the New World Order and will die fighting it. They know exactly what's going on and what the future holds, but they have a different agenda because they worship a different god. And this is really what's behind all of this. There is a spiritual force on the other side opposing the Judeo-Christian belief in the dignity of man under God. Karen, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
To thank you for having me on the show and to just be aware of what's going on. It's really important to support the defunding of these things in the next couple months, to support the Child Medication Safety Act in Congress, and to let your state legislators and your federal legislators know that you will not accept the implementation of this kind of program in your state.
Well, of course, we keep opposing, and they just keep changing the names, and they bring it in, because they have an agenda. They're organized, they're well-funded, and fortunately, we do have a few good organizations on our side. We have Ron Paul, we have Ed Watts up there in Minnesota, and we recommend that group to you. I think they're doing a great job, and our guest has been Dr. Karen Ephraim, and I really want to tell you how much I appreciate your willingness to come on with us, and I hope we can call upon you to be on some of our other programs to bring your knowledge and understanding to our listeners across America.
It would be my pleasure, Dr. Stan. I really appreciate you having me on. I would also recommend...
We're out of time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good night. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when, of course, we have to remind our listening audience that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And, of course, you'll remember that our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-MORE. To really understand what's happening to education and their plan for your children and your grandchildren, let me suggest our 4-tape set on Fed Ed and the book that goes with that, Fed Ed. We also have a four-tape set on outcome-based education, and we have a book that goes with that. It's called OBE. We have the book by Charlotte Isabey, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. We've recommended to you. Charlotte was in the Department of Education, and she's got a wealth of information. It's a long-range plan to work very closely to bring about a fascist America. And people don't like that word fascist, but that's exactly what it is. When you want to call it red fascism, doesn't really matter. A ruling elite will impose their will upon us, whether we want that or not. And then, of course, you would want to get the book that John Stormer wrote, None Dare Call It Education. That's None Dare Call It Education. And, of course, the excellent book by our good friend Barrett Schoes entitled Brave New Schools. That's Brave New Schools. All of these are available through Radio Liberty. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And help us get the truth out across America. We have the material. You need to get it, and you need to help us disseminate this across America while we have time. Then, of course, we remind you about my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because this takes you into the background of this movement. It's truly a satanic movement for the souls of men. Now, if you doubt that there really is a satanic movement today, you need to get the videos we're offering, either the 4-hour or the 10-hour video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. That's the 4-hour or 10-hour version. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And, of course, you'll hear the pop stars talking about how they sold their souls to the devil. Sounds pretty kooky, doesn't it? But it shouldn't. There really are satanic organizations. There really are Satan worshippers in America and throughout the world today. We have a great four-tape set. It's called Aleister Crowley and His Friends. He was a Satanist. The most powerful man, in fact, his legacy haunts America today. Timothy Leary was his disciple. Harry Hay, who formed the Gay Liberation Movement. Alfred Kinsey and the Sexology. Robert Alton Wilson, who, of course, the father of pornography. These people have disciples all throughout our educational system and at every level of our society and government today. You need to understand that this is not imaginary, it's not real, it's not paranoia. You're not paranoid when there really are people out to get you. So a great book we have, it's called Fallen Angel by Thomas Friend, and it's the story of Led Zeppelin, the music group, and their most popular of all music albums, The Stairway to Heaven, and it's all satanic. We have a four-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance. We've got a special, great special on the pagan agenda. And until you recognize that we are involved in a spiritual battle, you can't understand why they want your children. You see, they want everybody's children. They want their souls. And they're leading people into false religions across America today. If you don't understand what's happening with the church growth movement, you need to get our excellent book. Pardon me, you need to get our excellent video. Diaprax, that's Diaprax. You need to get our four-tape set on the church growth movement. It's sweeping America as the great apostasy spreads across our land and the people turn away from God. So our plea with you is pray for America. Pray for revival and the return to true religion instead of this false religion that comes out of the very new age that is opposed to everything Christianity stands for. They talk about a Christ, but not the Christ of the Bible. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.